I'd like to welcome my fellow councillors, members of the gallery and our staff that are here. As I noted to the councillors earlier, I'm actually in the council chamber with the deputy mayor and a number of the staff. So we're quite distant. We're practicing our social distancing. We just thought because of the meeting, it would be better to, organise and arrange in the event we had any technical difficulties. I declare the meeting open for the 23rd of June 2020. I would like to firstly read the council prayer, so I'd ask you all, please, for those of you that wish, to bow for the council prayer. Lord, we humbly beseech thee to vouchsafe thy blessing on this council, direct and prosper its deliberations for the advancement of this area and the true welfare of its people. Amen. Thank you. I'd also like to acknowledge the Wangal people, who are the traditional custodians of this land, and I pay my respects to their elders, both past and present, of the Wangal Nation. Just a reminder to councillors and members of the public that our meetings and council committees are audio recorded for the purpose of assisting with the preparation of the meeting minutes and promoting meeting transparency. So such recordings are subject to the provisions of the Government Information Act of 2009 and are available for public review via the council website. So bear with me just a moment because I have now lost my screen. There we go. All right. I also, just because this is a new way of meeting, I guess the for those members of the public that are on the actual meeting, and I'd like to also welcome Councillor Del Duca that's joined the meeting. Just a couple of, additional notes to assist with the participation of this Zoom meeting. Everyone, please stay muted until you are asked to unmute yourself. And then after you have unmuted yourself and spoken, I'd ask that you mute yourself again once you have finished speaking. To our councillors, please raise your hand if you wish to speak during the considerations of items of business, just so I can see you and address you. Speakers are reminded that they are strictly limited to speaking for no more than 3 minutes. Please remember that council meetings are decision-making forums and not question and answer sessions. You are welcome to make yourself visible by using the video control at your disposal in Zoom. And please note that the two items of confidential business are to be considered towards the end of tonight's meeting. As per the provisions under the Local Government Act, members of the public will be excluded from that part of the meeting. Do I have any declarations of interest, of political donations, by councillors? I note there's no declarations of political donations. Apologies, leave of absence. We've got an apology for Councillor Raj Dixit. That is, and I have a mover to have his leave accepted and granted. So it's been moved by Councillor Furneaux Cook. It's seconded by Councillor Del Duca. I'll put the motion. All those in favour, those against, I declare that carried unanimously. There will be a recording of councillors on voting this evening because there's a number of planning decisions. I have the minutes of the council meeting held on the 19th of May 2020. Do I have a councillor that will move?
I'll move it. I also need to declare interest on two items, Mr. Mayor.
Yes, I'll get back to the interest disclosure. So sorry. So it's been moved by Councillor Furneaux Cook, seconded by Councillor Chan. I'll put the motion that the minutes be adopted from the meeting held on the 19th of May. All those in favour, those against, I declare that carried unanimously. Now, declarations of interest.
Mr. Mayor, I've got two items to declare, which is item 3020 and item 3120. I declare it as a non-pecuniary interest as my property is in the vicinity of the planning proposal and the VPA.
Okay, so that's been noted, Tanya. Well, Councillor Furneaux Cook, so will you be leaving?
I'll leave as I have done in the past.
Okay. Thank you, Councillor Furneaux. Any other declarations of interest? Okay. Our next item is the mayoral minute. So We'll just do our Merrill Minute and our Notice of Motions, and then we'll get the public involved on the first item. So my Merrill Minute is on the COVID-19 support programs for recovery phase. As councillors would be aware, you've got attached a copy of the Merrill Minute. Sorry, it wasn't on the agenda, but we were working on some details for the Merrill Minute. And I think we just happened to finalise that on Friday. So sorry for the late notice. I won't go through the whole range of the minute because there's been a number of support programs that council has been running, re the COVID-19 via our Burwood Cares program. That is due to expire at the end of June, hence why I've put another Merrill Minute this evening. I might just actually read the minute to adopt. So, and then if there's any questions, I'll take those. If there isn't, I'll put them in it. As a continuation of the relief measures implemented by Burwood Council in response to the COVID-19 pandemic, I therefore move one, that Council provides a $30 rates rebate on the 2020-21 residential rates notice as part of the Build Cares program to help ease the financial burden on local residents. Councillors might be asking, why the $30? The $30 is the average increase per rates that we would have got via the IPART increase. So whatever the IPART increase, we're able to actually average that out, and it worked out the actual part of that increase was $30. So we thought rather than actually take the increase this year, we can pass it back on as a rebate. Sorry, that was for the special rate variation, that part of it, sorry, which is the $30. Two, council continues to waive all mandatory health inspection fees for the next 3 months. Three, council provides an additional 3 month credit to all businesses who have paid a license for outdoor dining once business returns to normal. Four, council continues to adopt a flexible and pragmatic approach to enforcement and compliance action for the next 3 months, including the increased grace period for ticketed and time parking to 15 minutes, by 15 minutes, I should say. Council continues, number five, council continues its increased program of cleansing and book cleanups until end of July 2020, with further relief measures to be assessed and implemented by the general manager as needed. Six, that the general manager reviews the implementation of the current rent relief package for cafes, sporting facilities and childcare centres for which council is the landlord, with adjusted relief measures to be assessed and implemented by the mayor and general manager as needed. And we're only asking for approval for the next 3 months. So if it goes over that 3 months, we'll come back to council. Seven, the council continues to liaise with our Chamber of Commerce and local businesses to implement business improvement programs to support operating and re-emerging businesses. Eight, council provides eligible businesses with tangible resources to assist with the enforcement of social distancing requirements in operating premises, which is part of our Build Cares program, which you would have noticed. Nine, that the general manager commences the development of a program of community initiatives and events for the spring summer season to support and contribute to the reactivation of our public spaces and our shopping and dining precincts. So, and that's really to investigate at this stage, because we're hoping and keeping our fingers crossed that we don't have the second wave or a spike, which is what's occurring in Victoria at the moment. So we're still very conscious of that, and hence why we're still slow and probably one of the last to be actually fully operating again. Eight, council provide, no, we've done that. 10, council continues its delivery of the Build Cares Notice Board, promoting and facilitating access to up-to-date information on community support services and the local business offerings. 11, council continues with our Build Cares e-newsletters for business and community, as well as providing information on council programs and other relevant support initiatives. 12, the general manager continues to review council's budget for 2021 to unlock funding for community and business recovery activities required under the COVID-19 pandemic, while also identifying potential savings from other activities currently placed on hold. 13, council continues the reactivation of community groups such as children, youth, migrant and senior groups. 14, council continues to engage with our vulnerable and isolated communities through targeted recovery programs. 15, council monitors and responds to the needs of culturally and culturally diverse community groups and at-risk community members, including international students. 16, Council continues to provide information and resources for businesses, including links to the federal government stimulus package and any support package provided by the New South Wales government through a dedicated section on Council's website. 17, the General Manager continues to review the rollout of key infrastructure projects based on a safety, resource and financial risk assessment. And 18, Council continues to take a multidisciplinary approach to the planning, design and management of public spaces to achieve social, economic and environmental outcomes throughout the city. So any questions? No questions, Councillor Fernow-Cook?
Just with the checking of the inspections, the health inspections to restaurants are still obviously taking place. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So John Mills is still out there. And others, sorry. Any other questions? I'll put them in it. All those in favour? Those against, I declare that carried. And that was unanimously. And the next item is item notice of motion 3/20, which is honouring our local heritage. So I might, that's been moved by Councillor Crichton. Do I have a seconder?
I'll second that and add an amendment with Councillor Crichton's acceptance.
Okay, what's that amendment? So I can just
ask. The amendment is one. So in one, if we call that first part 1A, and then 1B would be the General Manager investigates finalising and updating the route for the Enfield walking trail, which was also part of the original heritage project. And I can supply this later.
Yep.
And C1C, the General Manager investigates the inclusion of Indigenous history of the area in any of these council publications and products.
Okay. And Councillor Crichton, are you happy with that amendment?
I am happy with that. And can I add that? Not actually add, but just let the council know that I have spoken to World Historical Society.
Okay, I might just stop you just there. I'll just stop you there because now I'll get you on to speak. Can I just a quick question? So when you talk about Bilwood Heritage Walking Trail, I assume you're talking about the Bilwood LGA?
No, it's an actually
Or is it just Bilwood, is it? So what about Croydon Park.
Okay. It needs to be revised and updated to include Alvin Hill Estate. So, yeah, so that is a heritage walking trail that was published in a map form, a paper form, but it's also on our website in 2013.
Okay. Did you wish to speak, Councillor Crichton? Because you've moved the motion. It's been seconded by Councillor Fernow-Cook.
Thank you. Look, just briefly, you may recall that a couple of years ago, I did propose a notice of motion which saw the installation of a footpath plaque at Seven the Appian Way to commemorate the original meeting place of the Bilwood Braves Sporting Club in its centenary year. In working with the council officers and Braves, I was surprised that this was a one-off, a special order, and that there was no template design for council officers to follow. So what I thought was a fairly straightforward task became a little bit more involved with the selection of design and sign-off and materials and installation. So the intention of this motion is to provide council with avenues to add to our cultural value through to our community through simple but a well-considered scheme which may include a range of options such as heritage street lathes. And then other things like depicting, so we can easily depict the Appian Way, but maybe showing the Appian Way with a reference to the Hosking Brothers of 1904 or Malvern Hill Estate 1909, included on existing street poles such as Edwin Street and Thompson Street, but also later on for the Strand 1913 to 1920. So when visitors and our residents access those areas, that they are well aware of our very rich and valuable history. So this is I really look forward to the officer's report. I would really encourage our officers to have a look at existing heritage schemes offered by the City of Yarra in Melbourne, Port Adelaide Council, the City of Sydney, and also English Heritage, who have a blue plaque scheme as well, I think there's no need for us to really reinvent the wheel. I think a lot of research has been done behind some of these really wonderful schemes, and it's just up to our officers to pick the best elements for Burwood and tailor them for Burwood. And I think very easily we could really showcase and spotlight our heritage. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Crichton. Councillor Fernow-Cook, can I just ask you to go back onto mute, Councillor Crichton? Councillor Fernow-Cook?
Oh, no, I think it's a fantastic initiative, particularly with the two amendments as well, because Enfield, like St Thomas's Church, is actually our oldest unaltered building in the LGA, and the graveyard has got some very interesting people, including the first mayor. It's not where you really want to end up, but it is a part of our history. And obviously, I was talking to Councillor Crichton, and she pointed out that we do have Wongle Park, but we have no signage to recognise the First Nations people in this area. So I think that needs to be part of our DNA. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fernow-Cook. Can I just ask you to go back on mute? Yes. Do I have any speakers against? Okay, there being no speakers against, I'm going to put the motion. All those in favour, raise a hand, please, just so I can see. So all those in favour, aye, those against, I declare that carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. Next item is item 4/20, which is also a notice of motion. Councillor Crichton, you've moved that again. Do I have a seconder? Been seconded by Councillor Manor, is that right? Okay. Councillor Crichton.
Thank you. I'm just unmuting. Thank you. I believe it's timely to consider establishing the Burwood 150-year steering committee. In every sense, we're working backwards from two key dates in 2024, being the 27th of March, which was the proclamation of Burwood, and the 9th of June, which was the date of the first council election. So these are the end points which we need to reach in a really thoughtful and considered way. I think if we wait until after the next local government elections in September of next year to consider this great Burwood anniversary opportunity, we have lost at least 15 months of valuable planning and community consultation time. I've done a little, a brief research of overseas jurisdictions, and some overseas cities actually suspend regular events and this is Canada. That's something that community. So,
okay, Councillor Crichton, I'm just getting a bit of feedback there. Yeah. So I might just stop you for a moment. Okay. Does the seconder wish to speak?
Sure. I have an amendment, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, just a sec. Okay, just before I go to Councillor, to the Deputy Mayor. Councillor Fernow-Cook, you have an amendment?
I just have a very small amendment in the resolution of number one to add in after the Historical Society and a representative from the Metropolitan Aboriginal Land Council.
Councillor Crichton, you're happy to accept that amendment? Yes, Councillor Crichton.
Thank you. I just see there's a range of the long term.
Councillor Crichton, I'm going to stop you because we're just getting some feedback. So can you just nod your hair? I think your internet's playing up. Councillor, to the Deputy Mayor, are you happy to accept that?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Did you wish to speak before we go back to Councillor Crichton? Deputy Mayor?
No. I congratulate Councillor Crichton for her initiative in regards to this item. Thank you.
Okay. Do I have any other speakers quickly before I go back to Councillor Crichton for a write a reply? Councillor Crichton, did you want to have a quick write a reply? Are you back there?
It's a very good. I would just like to think that first, that we've scoped up and we're ready to move on, and that they are aligned with our community. And I really apologize for applying.
Okay. Councillor Crichton, I might, we're not hearing you all the best, so I might. I take that as in, that's, I think, your internet. So maybe just take your okay, take your video off. Let's just try without the video. Is there anything else that anyone wants to raise re this item before I put the motion? Councillor Crichton, are you still there? Councillor Crichton? You're currently on mute. Okay, you still there? No, your connection's really bad.
I am here.
Okay, you are there. Did you have anything else you wanted to add?
No, fine. Thank you.
Okay. So there being no further discussion, I'll put the notice of motion 4/20 to a vote. All those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? I declare that carried unanimously. Okay, so those two items. So the first, the next item now, we are on general business, which is item 30/20, which is the results of the public exhibition for the adoption of the Development Control Plan Authority to proceed to amend the Burwood Local Environmental Plan in regards to the planning proposal 4250 and 5260 Railway Parade Burwood. I note that Councillor Fernow Cook has declared an interest on this item and the next. So you will, is there anything procedurally, Tanya? Okay, she's dropped off. Now, Councillor Crichton, do you want to just try to put your video back on while I call on Judy Burrell from Croydon? So, Judy, are you there? Judy, are you there? Hi, Judy.
Yep. Hi. How are you?
So, just quickly, you've got... I'll just read out the guidelines. Yep. So, the guidelines that apply for addressing items on the council agenda is a time limit of 3 minutes. Discussion, debate or questions involving councillors or staff is not permitted. The subject matter only is to be discussed. Personalities are not to be addressed. Speakers should refrain from providing any personal information unless it is necessary to the subject being discussed. Welcome, Judy. And
thank you.
Please go ahead.
Okay. I had my speech, but it was too long, so I've cut it right back. Okay. So I'm Judy Burrell. I'm a planner by profession and I've worked in various fields, including actually a stint as a planning officer at the local government shires, now LGNSW. But my main reason for being here tonight is because I'm a resident of Burwood LGA and I've got a main interest in the future of the area. So I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to comment on the planning proposal before you tonight. I became aware of this proposal in mid-May when it was exhibited, very late in its five-year history, and it raised a number of questions in my mind which I think Council needs to address before approving it. Why would Council put forward such a significant variation to its own planning controls as a site-specific proposal instead of considering these variations in the broader context of its LEP review? Why concentrate more development in the town centre, given that the train and bus systems there are already at or over capacity in peak periods and the town centre has existing problems with traffic congestion and parking? Why support a proposal that has such extensive impacts on neighbouring properties? Some units are going to end up with only 1.5 hours of sunlight, and this overshadowing extends and privacy issues extend 3 city blocks. So much of the justification for this planning proposal, I've read lots and lots of these documents, is to meet Burwood's dwelling targets. However, I'd quote Council's local strategic planning statement, which I gather was endorsed this year. While there is enough capacity for apartment development and for housing overall to 2036 in Burwood Council area, there is a shortfall of capacity for medium density development. Now, Burwood dwelling targets have already been met, so this proposal is not going to address the existing shortfall, which is in the medium density housing. My other question is, why use a planning proposal and a voluntary planning agreement to progress this development? Because what's happened is the council now has a financial interest in seeing this planning proposal approved. And this, I believe, has severely compromised its ability to undertake a fair and independent assessment of this proposal. This to me is clear from the omissions in the studies underpinning the planning proposal, as well as what I think is a very cursory view by council of the concern raised by submissions on the proposal. So critical questions that remain unanswered. Can the existing transport infrastructure and other infrastructure and services absorb such a major increase in demand in the town centre? And how can the major impacts on properties in relation to solar access and privacy be addressed at the DA stage, which is what the council is suggesting should happen? I think relegating consideration of the traffic and parking and solar access and privacy to the DA stage is akin to driving a truck through your house and then offering to help clean up the mess. Once the planning proposal is approved, there is very little that can be done to fix the damage, and there's very little that how the DA can fix up those issues. Council states it's satisfied that traffic and transport can be addressed without providing any evidence whatsoever to support this conclusion.
I might just get to wrap up too, Judy, because there's time, so I'll just get to finish off.
Okay, so the local strategic planning statement again shows that, and I quote, updated data provided by Transport for New South Wales from a month in 2019 shows strong patronage on the Burwood system with little spare capacity. This should really be ringing alarm bells for the council. And also I'm concerned that the RMS has not been consulted on the second proposal, and so we don't really know what the impacts on traffic are.
Okay, thank you, Judy.
Okay.
I might bring in now Frank Liu. Frank, are you there, Frank? Can I just ask you to go back on mute, Judy? Yep, that's great. Now, Frank, are you there? Frank Liu? Hello, Frank Liu? Frank, you're still muted. There you go.
Okay.
Got, yeah, 3 minutes, Frank, and then I'm going to ask you to wrap up, please. Please go ahead.
I'm just a local resident, just concerning this proposal. Also, I just first of all, in the world, there's a lot of elderly people, children. So to purchase already the product already completed in the neighboring residence. So this proposal object will severely undermine the life quality of the local residents, which already living here for quite a long time. Also, as one of the residents living in Burwood, I'm very proud that I can live in Burwood because it's a convenient living location and environment. And also Australia is actually, we have a big picture should bear in mind. Australia is not noted for the skyscrapers like in Hong Kong, Tokyo, or New York. It should be like the more leisure parks, green field. So this is a big, huge, mega project. I cannot imagine what will happen there because I already submitted two notes just written in detail. So just give a summary to everybody. Burwood is suburb full of brightness, windiness. So after this project finished, I think the population density is totally unreasonable after the new buildings listed in this plan proposal. So because the location will intend to stand in between number one railway parade and Emerald Square, and also the just finished the Burwood Grand. And also other ways like along the railway parade, already a lot of skyscrapers is building in progress, and some of the already blocked a lot of areas already. So this, planned proposal will be approved, so I cannot imagine, it will be no Burwood at all, not the Burwood we like it before. So the area is very limited, it is a hard truth, it's a fact. So that bring a lot of the negative impact to our environment, I think, and also especially the neighboring, the living quality of the local residents. The building is just
Frank, that's time now, so I'm going to get you to wrap up, please.
Meters, so it's so close, no privacy, no sunshine, and I think it's intolerable for us.
Thank you, Frank. So Frank's from Belmore Street at Burwood. Thank you, Frank. Ned Kutcher from Rose Street in Croydon Park. Ned, are you there?
Hello.
Yes, hi, Ned.
G'day.
Please go ahead.
Thanks very much. I'll start by acknowledging that I'm on unceded Wangal country. Pay my respects to any Indigenous people who might be participating in the Zoom conference. And I also wanted to acknowledge the excellent work that's been going on with the Burwood Cares program. the support for businesses and residents during the COVID-19 pandemic. And I raised that because I was a little surprised and disappointed that the spirit of that program didn't extend into the exhibition of the planning proposal. The proposal being exhibited for 28 days during pretty much the height of the pandemic lockdown, I think meant that a lot of people who would have an interest in this discussion have not been engaged by it. And I think for a proposal of this significance to only receive 60 submissions from a population of some 40,000 is not something that council should be pleased with. I noted that this wasn't addressed in the summary that was provided in the business papers, but I actually put together an online petition, and I communicated this petition via a couple of Facebook groups, local groups. And it is apparent to me that Burwood very much does care about this issue. My petition, I published it about 3 days before the end of the exhibition period and got 90 signatures on it over the course of the weekend. It has continued to run, now has nearly 200 signatures on it. These are signatures of local people who, for whatever reason, haven't otherwise engaged with this process. But I think that's something that councillors ought to note. And I think, quite strongly, these are local people with local concerns, but it's also evident that there's people outside of the Burwood local government area who are concerned about the implications of this proposal should go through as well. And I think, that's the key thing here. This is a significant proposal. This is a moment in time for Burwood. That you can decide, we've been told we're a strategic growth centre and we're looking to places like Chatswood and Bondi Junction and Green Square for our inspiration. Perhaps we shouldn't be looking to those places, or perhaps we should be looking to those places and saying, well, how can our vision be different? I'm not so sure that the vision that's been presented here in this proposal is one that the community is altogether comfortable with. This will be a legacy for this council. I might just get a wrap up too, Ned. Okay, I'll leave it there. Just on that note, councillor, that what the decision that is made here tonight will be the legacy of this council, and that's something that you should consider. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ned. Thanks for your participation, Karen Vance, on behalf of the Climate Action Burwood Action Group for Burwood and Canada Bay, which is from Croydon Park, also. So, welcome, Karen. I can see you there.
Hello, everybody. Thank you very much for listening to me and the concerns of my group. So I'm speaking on behalf of a local residents group and Climate Action Burwood Canada Bay. And we meet regularly in Burwood, or we did until COVID has sent us also to Zoom. And we as a group are concerned about the impact of climate change on the planet and believe we also must act at a local level to do what we can to prevent further global warming. And we believe the way we build and live in our cities needs to become more sustainable, and this has implications for building in Burwood. And so some of the concerns that we have about the planning proposal to amend the development control plans for the site on Burwood Parade in Burwood, and I'd like to talk about some of those. In seeking to increase the building height allowance and floor space ratio significantly beyond that was proposed in 2016, we know there are public benefits that have been offered, and one of those is building a small public park in place of the current library car park. I mean, our concerns are that Burwood already has the least amount of public open space available per person in Sydney, and that's according to the New South Wales Office of Local Government. And the park offered on this plan will offset only about 2 square metres of green space per new dwelling. And green space is really important and provides significant social and environmental benefits. And urban green space also mitigates against the urban heat island effect. And we're concerned about future buildings, raising the local temperature through increasing with the hard surfaces that absorb, store and radiate heat. And we're also concerned about the carbon emissions generated both in constructing and in the ongoing operations of new buildings, and ask for assurances that these will be properly monitored and managed as a consideration in any approval of future developments at this site. We'd also ask for consideration about renewable energy and charging stations for electric vehicles to be considered as part of any future building approvals. And we had a look through and we couldn't see that these issues were addressed in the amended planning proposal or the draft development control plans. And so we therefore asked council to refer the proposal back to the developer for consideration of these issues, these being the substantial increase in available access to green space, including a tree canopy, what the plans are for amelioration of the impact of the urban heat islands, energy and thermal performance outcomes for any future developments of the site, and opportunities for carbon offsets in the local area. So thank you.
Thanks, Karen.
My bit.
Thanks for participating. Right on time. Excellent. And we've got Therese O'Leary, who's from Croydon Park, wishing to speak, and then we'll hand over. Now, the applicant's got five or six speakers registered, but I'm going to speak to the applicant, see if we can cut that to two, because we don't want six people saying, I guess, the same thing. Therese, welcome.
Yeah. Hi, John. Look, I'm really nervous, so I'm just going to read. Can you tell me when I get close to the time?
Yep.
Look, thanks for the opportunity to speak. As the town centre is taking such a hit to meet New South Wales government housing targets, with the assurances of other suburb areas not being impacted from this density, then why are suburb areas such as Enfield and Croydon Park still being targeted with developments such as Flower Power and Vision Australia sites, and in particular the recent approval of the three-storey development on the corner of Tangara and Portland Streets? These developments are outside the town centre, not on a main road and not in keeping with neighbouring residential housing. These raise concerns about how the spread of density is impacting on the Greater Council area and how much control Burwood Council has over state government policy and dwelling targets. What assurances do the community have that there will not be another development like what happened opposite the site on Railway Parade? The council fought all the way to the High Court and lost, meaning there is nothing that could be done about what happened. In my view, there has been poor community consultation with the public exhibition and notifications, not giving reasonable opportunity to be well-informed, participate and engaged. In my experience, when community consultation is driven by the developers, it has been marked and has been a marketing and troubleshooting exercise to further the developers' interests. This is a conflict of interest and not necessarily in the community's best interest. In the developer's submission, they mentioned the proximity to WestConnect in support of their application. This can only mean more cars, increasing the battle to travel around our own suburb. Not to mention, this will put me off using the area for such things as grocery shopping, which I do not use public transport for, and do not want to rush around a large shopping area needing to do this within the two-hour free parking limit. Sydney Metro will address some infrastructure issues and will also drive further development into the area. There is no guarantee this project will be completed as we now understand it, as well as there could be a change of government policy or a change of government before the development is started or completed. If the height and floor space ratio is approved, then how do we know we will not end up with another building like what's opposite on Railway Parade? There's not enough urban recreational and sporting parkland to meet existing council demands. What are the council able to do to adequately address this shortfall? The other thing is, what systems are being put in place about air quality monitoring and airflow, especially in relation to Burwood School and public health, and who will be responsible for the ongoing monitoring and costs? Sorry, I'm reading so fast. Anyway, in conclusion, this development raises more questions than it answers. I do not believe that all the issues identified in the public submissions can be managed, adequately addressed and resolved without extensive and comprehensive community consultation by Burwood Council. It is not sufficient for council staff to say they are satisfied that the impacts can be addressed. The community consultation has happened during the impacts of COVID-19 and now tonight's decision, when people are still dealing with COVID-19, and it is also the end of financial year.
Thanks, Therese. I might just get
I've just got two sentences.
Yep, go for it.
This community consultation has been inadequate for the scale and impact of the application, and the decision needs to be deferred with community consultation being reopened to it include extensive community involvement between the community and Burwood Council to ensure as much community benefit as possible. For the above reasons, I oppose supporting this application.
Thank you, Therese.
Thanks, John.
Thanks for your involvement. Now, the next speaker is Mr. Nassif from Holdmark. Mr. Nassif, are you there speaking, or I'll just get you to unmute. You're still on mute there. Okay.
Mr. Mayor, it's David Furlong. We're all here at Holdmark. Okay.
David, are you speaking? Because you're registered, or is Mr. Nassif speaking?
Just me for the moment, Mr. Okay. Mayor. We have all our consultants here. We have no issues we wish to raise with the reports. We're simply here to answer any questions the councillors may have and to respond to the issues. And just on that regard, I note that many of the very valid points that the speakers tonight have made relate to the DA, not the planning proposal. And a lot of those issues will fall into the final design of, in a detailed sense, of the buildings before we lodge our DA. So as you're aware, this is a process that's been going on for some time. And it's just now that it's programmed after 3 to 4 years of its exhibition. So we're just here if you have any questions that you'd like of the team. Otherwise, we're happy to listen to the proceedings.
Okay, thank you. Is Sue Francis wishing to speak, who's also listed here?
Mr. Mayor, I'm registered, but I don't need to speak. I'm happy to answer any questions the councillors might have.
Okay, and I assume that goes along with Mr. Nassif, Kevin Nassif, Sarkis Nassif, David Spoken, and Mr. Harrison from Architectus.
Yes, that's correct, Mr. Mayor, okay. Unless you have a question.
All right. I might allow then, so I might ask everyone to go on mute, and unless I ask you to, I address you to speak, I might ask the councillors if they have any questions of staff. Councillor Del Duca, do you have a question?
Yes, I do. I have a couple. Firstly, let me just thank all the residents that came and spoke. It's great to see people taking an interest and having a platform to make their voices heard, especially in this time when we're not able to physically meet in the chamber. And it's good that I appreciate getting onto a Zoom meeting. Might not be that easy for everyone. And it's great that people came and voiced their concerns. There are a couple of things that were raised by a resident, which I thought were some valid points that I did want to speak to. And this might be to those speaking on behalf of the proposal. Firstly, I guess the questions that were raised by Judy Birrell around the impact of public transport and the effect that this is expected to have on the critical mass of public transport in the area. Could you guys just speak to it and respond to that question?
I'll just get you to go through the chair. Councillor Del Duca, and we might address the questions to Kimberly, and then if our staff can't answer any technical questions, then we'll put that back to the applicant. Okay.
Yeah, so through you, Mr. Meg, I'd just like to ask if we could get an understanding of the impact on public transport in the area and what the review has shown and the effects of this.
Okay, so I'll ask Kimberly Everett, who is our Deputy General Manager, to address that issue.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Del Duca, we have been in consultation with RMS through this process of the planning proposal. They are satisfied at the moment with the information that has come through to them in the documentation, which was on public exhibition, and are anxiously awaiting the development application. And at that time, they will give us a formal response. So that's on the traffic and transport. The demands at the Burwood train station, which you may be also referring to, we all understand that that is at demand. And we, again, are anxious to see what the loading capacities will be at the new Burwood North station coming online at the same time that this development would be coming online over the next 5 to 10 years. So we believe between those two stations that they will meet the demand of the capacity of the additional population in Burwood Town Centre.
Okay, and that view through Ms. Mayor, just asking, has that been based on any particular modelling or forecasting, or is it an assumption?
Yes, through you, Mr. Mayor. There is a transport study as part of the planning proposal, which takes on the capacity of the additional commercial, retail, and residential population within this development.
Okay, thank you, Kimberly. Through Mr. Mayor, I had a question regarding the process. I believe it was that asked, but correct me if I was wrong. Just around the timing of the development application, you know, being in the middle of an extremely unique time, of our coronavirus and everyone being on lockdown, and, you know, concerns that he raised in relation to whether or not sufficient access was given. Like, whilst I'm aware that public exhibitions are normally sufficient access, given the extenuating circumstances of the period, whether we feel that is a valid concern. And I guess what I'd be interested to hear is, where we've had 60 submissions made here, how do those numbers correlate with other submissions in the past? For example, the one across the road on Railway Parade, are the numbers of people that have spoken or have voiced either concerns or support significantly different in previous developments than what we've seen here during this time?
Okay, thanks, Councillor Del Duca. Kimberly?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Okay. I can compare it to some current DAs that we have had over the last, say, year, and this is by far the greatest response that we have had. When we exhibited the local strategic planning statement earlier this year, we had about 80 responses to that, and that was an entire local government notification. 15,000 letters went out to the residents, and we had about 80 responses, whereas here we sent out 1,100 letters to the local community, and we got 60 responses. So I don't know if you want to do a direct correlation between the two, but that kind of tells you that this was a high response for most of Burwood development. This is a planning proposal, not a development application, but we feel like it is a fairly high response based upon other things not within the COVID-19 period, and particularly at a time when everybody was at home.
Okay. Do any of the other councillors have a question? So have questions, and I'll come back to you if you've got. Anyone else want in between? Councillor Crichton?
Yes, please. Thank you. Through you, Mr. Mayor, could I ask our General Manager or our Director of Planning, if the recommendations are not supported here tonight, where does that leave Council?
Just ask that again. Do you cut out a bit?
If the recommendations as suggested in the paper aren't supported tonight, where does that leave Council with this development?
So, Kimberly, I think you could answer that.
Obviously, this is the process that is the most democratic process, which is taking it through council and having the ability for the public to make their wishes known. However, the planning legislation does allow for unsolicited proposals to be directed directly to the Department of Planning, and that would then leave the applicant, the proponent, with the ability to go to the Department of Planning, who, parenthetically, has already approved the amended gateway and submit their application directly to them.
Just a follow on to that, what's the consequence to council if council didn't support the planning proposal and they went directly to the department? What would that mean for council then?
What it would mean for council is that we would not necessarily be asked to collaborate on the outcomes of the planning proposal and thus the DA, and we would also not have the ability to enter into a voluntary planning agreement with the proponent.
So we would lose a form of control of the actual planning process or the outcome of where we want it to head. So the department could sort of then override some of the suggestions we've made in the actual proposal. Is that correct?
Yes, and there would potentially be less opportunity for the public to have a say in the actual development application process.
Okay. So when you say that the department has already given approval to the gateway, why has it then come back to council? Is it just to actually manage the exhibition and make the plan, or is it, why is that process when the department's already approved a gateway for the planning proposal?
When a gateway is approved through the department, it there are two...
When we're talking about department, we're talking about the New South Wales Department of Planning.
Planning, Industry and Environment. Yes, or DPI for short.
Yeah.
So there's two avenues that an approved gateway can take. One is to be referred back to the council for public consultation. So they ask the council to actually take on the public consultation, which we have done. And they can then, at that point, grant the council the ability to make the amendments to the LEP, the local environmental plan, or send it back to the department for the making of that LEP. We are an example of the latter case, where the department has asked us to do the public consultation ourselves, since we are intimately a part of the community and we have the ability to talk to the community, and then we will be sending it back to the department with the results of this meeting, one way or the other, and the department will then choose to make the plan, the local environmental plan for us.
Okay. Any other questions? Councillor Del Duca?
Thank you, and through you, Mr. Mayor. That actually, following on from my previous question, and it's actually good asking Councillor Crichton to go first. It sort of raised a different thought that I had. When I was originally asking, and to Ned's point about whether there had been sufficient access, the numbers actually show something a little different, in the sense that you're saying for a previous development where we had 15,000 letters mailed out, we had 80 responses, and here we've had 1,100. Now I'd had 80 responses, which is a 60 responses, which is a fairly significant return from the people affected. The people questioned. I'm just sort of wondering from that, does that sort of raise why, I know we might look at that and say, well, we're only talking to the people that are in neighbouring areas, but this is a very, very big development. And I also want to say to those on here from it, I don't have a problem with it as such. I think it's actually,
I might just get you to stick to questions. So we're getting into a bit of statement. And so we'll do the questions and then you can speak on the matter when we get into a motion, Councillor.
Sure. Is there a avenue, as opposed to a rejecting, is there an avenue here where we should look at this and say, well, out of only 1,100 people, 60 responded, that's quite a high concentration rate. This is a very large development, right in the heart of our area. Is it worth actually extending this and sending the letter out to a larger number of people to see? Because even though you live in Enfield or Croydon Park, this is still your city centre. And as Therese said, it might stop where she goes shopping. Do we consider this?
So the question, Councillor, I'll just get you to lead to the question.
Do we consider this to be of significant interest to potentially broaden the scope of people that we are asking for feedback on this? And is that
so should we to... should we have increased or is there or should we increase the
we increase
notification
the...
area? Okay, Kimberly.
That's certainly up to council's purview to do. I will note that there is a deadline in which we are also working to have the plan made, and the department has given us that deadline of a year from the time that we receive this, which is February of next year. And that's quite a lengthy process that we would be waiting on. We're still under the COVID requirements. I'm not sure in that what the additional time frame would be. We could look in that if you wanted to do that. I might also note that we have a community participation plan. Council has that, and it's available on Council's website, and that plan can be reviewed, and the processes followed were consistent with that community participation plan, which council has approved, and also within the COVID-19 regulations with the Department of Planning published, which amended how you do things during this period electronically.
Any other councillors with questions? Deputy Mayor?
Yeah, look, can I, just one more time, can I ask through you, Mr. Mayor, if Kimberly can explain that the process where if we lose control over this item and it goes to planning, could she explain a little bit more in detail? So,
okay, noted. Kimberly?
Please. Thank you.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, could you explain your question just
so
a
I
little
think,
bit?
I think the Deputy Mayor's, and correct me if I'm wrong, is just wanting a bit more clarification on if council does not proceed or does not give a tick to the planning proposal, for example, this evening, what that could mean when you're saying that we lose control of the planning. Is that correct, Mr.
Okay,
Deputy
Mayor? Well, I would...
Or the planning process or the actual planning outcome of the development. In light of that, it might be an idea to maybe touch on, I guess, because I always get a lead, and my question was going to lead to currently the area is zoned for pretty much what's built behind it and in front of it. So does that technically mean even if the planning proposal doesn't proceed, they can go off tomorrow and actually just put in your 4 or 5, 25 or 26 story towers, which is what's sort of behind or in front of them?
Yeah, so through you, Mr. Mayor, thank you. There's two things in those two questions. One, I'll address yours first, Mr. Mayor. Mm. The current zoning does allow for the type of development that is already there in the examples of Burwood Grand and Emerald Square. So that would be what would be allowed within the current zoning. The gateway approval that was given to this project, which the one we were discussing, means that the department at the state level has already accepted the additional height and the additional square meters and the density as proposed. So if you do not accept this tonight, it's still open to the proponent to go back to the state and say, we'll just work with you. And it would go through that process and go to a regional planning panel for approval, and the staff and the council would lose, I wouldn't say control so much, because you would still have the ability, and you sit on the planning panel, the regional planning panel, as minority participants, but you would still have sight of it, but you wouldn't have the ability to have a say about it. The collaboration, the consultation at the community level would disappear.
Okay. Any other questions by councillors? Well, I've got a question while councillors are thinking. With the existing planning controls, you mentioned that you would get towers that are equivalent to what's there currently, like Emerald Square or Burwood Grand. With the new planning proposal that's been put forward, I know there is an increase in height, but has that meant we've allowed greater setbacks to allow skinnier buildings rather than, because my biggest, I guess, issue with the development that's occurring in the town centre is we're getting these short, fat, boundary to boundary buildings. How do we know that this proposal, from what I've seen, shows that there's going to be setbacks, for example, along Railway Parade, along Clarendon Lane, there'll be a new bus interchange along Railway Parade, which will be set back. There'll be greater footpaths, so you won't have the boundary to boundary type buildings, and you'll have public spaces to walk through the actual arcade and so forth. How can we guarantee that that gets protected and we don't have a DA come forward in the future where the developer then proposes to have boundary to boundary buildings and we're getting those short, fat, ugly buildings, excuse the, I guess the language, but I mean the short sort of wider, you know, bulky buildings, which really it doesn't provide good design in my view. Kimberly?
Thank Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. It's obvious that you have read the site-specific development control plan that's been part of these papers tonight, because that's exactly where those controls take place, and they are, that development control plan is up for adoption by council tonight. And it provides exactly that. It is the guiding urban design document that we have available that we can always refer to for this particular development. If that is not approved as part of this project, then that does not exist independently of this project. It's specifically developed for this, and those setbacks and those heights and those, that massing that you describe, applies to this specifically. It's site specific.
And just a follow-on question to that, because there's a number of residents that now have moved into the new buildings in the Billwood Grand, which is behind where the council library. The issues raised the privacy and obviously solar access. So under the existing planning, laws that we have now, under the current LEP floor space and height, as opposed to this new proposal, what does that mean for their solar and privacy? Is it a better outcome or a worse outcome? Is what I'm trying to understand.
Right. So there's two things, and thank you, Mr. Mayor, through you, Mr. Mayor. There's two things here, the site-specific development control plan, but there's also been quite a bit of modeling on the solar access. And if I could defer to the proponent's architect and consultant that has done the solar access modeling. I believe he is registered as a speaker today, and Mr. Harrison, or through David Furlong, maybe Mr. Harrison could address that specifically.
So I might ask Mr. Harrison to unmute his computer there. If you can just go on, just unmute yourself, Michael, because you're still on mute.
Hello, yep. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Can you just please address the issue that was raised with regards to how your new proposal, and I must just note for those that are listening in, Michael Harrison is from Architectus, and he's on behalf of the applicant, so he's the architect, one of the architects, I should say, on the proposal. How is this new proposal going? Is it going to be worse or better in regards to solar access to those rear buildings? Can you address that?
It will be pretty similar, a little bit better than if you develop buildings like Emerald Grand and Burwood, Emerald Square and Burwood Grand on the proposal site. The solar access would be similar, perhaps slightly better. But the main issue is that the width of the buildings in the proposal are narrower in an east-west direction, so that the developments from behind have better views looking north than buildings closer together, which would be the case in shorter developments. But the solar axis is pretty similar because the towers are narrower and taller, and that tends to sort of compensate out. The solar access is really controlled by the New South Wales Apartment Design Guide, and we're consistent with the design guide in terms of number of hours in the middle of winter to apartments during the day, both for the subject proposal and the neighbours behind Emerald Square and Burwood Grand.
So just on that, Mr. Harrison, with regards to the separation of buildings, I know the Australian Design Guidelines has a set standard for separation between towers when you build. How is having the narrower towers and taller towers, is that having the same separation as the Australian Design Guidelines, like 6 and 12 and 18 metres, or are you proposing larger setbacks?
If you had wider towers, and you had apartments facing south from the proposal, then you need to have a 24-metre separation. We have an 18-metre separation. That's because our towers are much narrower, so we don't need to have any apartments facing directly south. So on the apartment design guide, it means that we don't have any apartments facing directly south to the apartments of Burwood Grand or Emerald Square. Then you can go to 18 metres. That's the standard guideline in the New South Wales Apartment Design Guide, and that's what we adhere to.
Okay. Is there any other questions from councillors? Councillor Chan, can I just ask you, Mr. Harrison, to just go back quickly on mute so we don't get any feedback? Yep. Councillor Chan, did you have a question? Just go ahead.
Yes, sir. Through you, Mr. Chairman, to Kimberly. I'm just looking at page 83, the indicative figure two, indicative building locations, right? My question is, the indicative building locations on this diagram, on this figure, will sort of form a guideline to control the future towers' location of the development. Let's say at the moment, the tower A and B are sort of running more or less 90 degrees to the railway line. Mm-hmm. Once we adopted this, does that mean that it was sort of restricted the developers from swinging, let's say, tower A and make it parallel to the railway line?
Okay. All right. So, Kimberly, did you get that? So what Councillor Chan, I guess, is asking is, what's to stop them from having Tower A run along Railway Parade in the future, whereas now it's showing it as 90 degrees, and then it has less solar access or more? I guess that goes back to that DCP attached.
Yeah, I think I can, through you, Mr. Mayor, I think I can fairly state that the intent is to provide as much solar access as possible in this development to other developments and surrounding buildings. The purpose of the approval of this site-specific DCP, which this page 83 has come from, is to provide the envelopes in which we can design. So as we move forward, we won't be able to, vary the configuration of the towers very much unless we can show that we are improving the amenity through those design changes. So these are the minimums, and hopefully through the architectural process, which I'm hoping is true, is that we will improve as we go through and get into a more detailed phase of the project.
Thank you.
Councillor Chan, any further questions?
No,
Councillor Deputy Mayor, you had a question. Can I?
Yes, just on page 21, the public benefits.
I might just leave the public.
If this,
are you going into the VPA?
Okay.
Okay.
No, I just the question I wanted to ask. Sorry, was that if this item it doesn't go through tonight, what happens in public benefits with the monetary and everything else that we have?
Yeah, through you, Mr. Mayor. Deputy Mayor, the VPA only applies to this project. So if this project is not approved, you won't even need to vote on the VPA.
And so that technically means that they could then lodge with the Department of Planning, and it has no VPA with it as well?
Correct.
Okay. So it's not just a loss of control of planning, it's losing the control of the VPA as well.
Or there would be no benefits.
And public benefits. Okay.
Right.
Now, my other question, just quickly, while councillors are still thinking if they have questions, is now there was a discussion and I think Karen raised it with regards from the climate build Canada Bay climate action group. What about, so when will we deal with the sustainability of the buildings and making sure they're green rated and so forth? Is that at this stage, or would that be something we look at a DA stage if this is approved?
That's at the DA stage, Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
The Burwood's current DCP contains most of those requirements, and of course that plus the apartment design guidelines and any other state or local requirements will be considered at that time.
Okay, excellent. Because I have been thinking for a number of months during the whole COVID issue, you know, with regards to shared cars and obviously hybrid cars now, that we should actually put a policy in place, and I might move a mirror minute, foreshadowing possibly at the next meeting, that to mandate charging stations in those car parks now of these developments. Okay. And my other question is with regards to now the car park that's currently in front of the library that's being proposed as a park, that is still council land. Now, I just want to ask the question, currently that's zoned for development. So council in the future, if it wasn't to encompass it as part of this proposal, could sell that off. A future council in 10 or 20 years time could sell that off and you could actually get another 15 or 16 story tower there on that corner. Is that correct?
Sorry, Mr. Mayor, I've not looked at the zoning of the car park. I'm not sure what's exactly allowed there height-wise.
Well, I mean, it's zoned for a multi-use development, so I think it's similar to the adjoining site.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Any other questions? Councillor Del Duca?
Yeah, thank you. And through Mr. Mayor, I was just trying to wonder if hypothetically we did, for example, defer a decision on this to the next council meeting and then therefore reopen this for another 28 days and contacted all residents to give a greater number of people an opportunity to have their views heard on this. What impacts, if any, would that have, A, on the council and B, on the applicant as far as their timeline for the development in question?
Oh, I can't answer for the applicant, so I might ask the applicant to answer that. Mr. Furlong? Well, while the applicant's getting there, just hang on, Mr. Furlong. Kimberly, did you want to add something?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, Councillor Del Duca, I do not know that the proponent would need to wait on council to make a decision in 28 days.
So what you're saying is that the applicant can then not wait for council, can go directly to the department, which is what they can technically do now.
They can ask for that to happen, yes.
Okay, right. Then with that information, can I then also then add to the question, then if it gave more residents a chance to have their voice heard, would the applicant be happy to do that as well?
Mr. Furlong?
Mr. Mayor, at the moment, the proponent, Holdmark, are happy to stick with the time period that we've been going through and the process we've been in with the council staff. However, as you're aware, this thing has been going for a long, long time. We are at a planning proposal stage only. We're not at a DA. And it's highly unlikely that we would wait for a second round of notification when the council has complied with all the state criteria. We've complied with the gateway requirements from the department. We will answer for Messrs. Nassif, that because my advice to them would be that we go straight back to the department. We'd be very happy working with council and the building planning working group, and we continue to do so with engineering and planning staff. It's a process that we're very much engaged in, but we can't wait for just put a month back. It's just not possible for us in terms of the economics of the project.
Thank you. Okay, point taken. Thank you. Any further questions? Any councillors further question? Councillor Del Duca, Manor, Chan, Crichton. Now I just want to just double check that. Okay. Do I have a mover then?
I'll move it. As per recommendation.
So it's been moved by Councillor Manor. Do I have a seconder? I can't see hands. Do I have a seconder? Councillor Chan's been seconded by Councillor Chan. Okay. Councillor Manor, did you wish to speak?
Yes. Given listening to Kimberly Everett and the comments in regards to the loss of control in the planning and the loss of public benefits money and also just Mr. Furlow's comments just now, I strongly feel that we're in a better position to be able to consult with our community and move forward and work with the applicant to get the best outcome for our council. So I would be supporting this recommendation.
Okay, thanks, Deputy Mayor. Councillor Chan, did you wish to speak?
I guess I'm
reluctantly supportive of this motion. I don't really like the DCP. DCP has this site-specific sort of particular alteration to a normal DCP, because I believe this site-specific DCP could set a precedent for future developers to follow suit. And I understand all the residents have concern with privacy, green space, transport, et cetera. My personal concern is that I did live in a multi-story high-rise building before, and I work in one of those buildings. If a building is about 40 something story high, I'm just thinking about in times of evacuation that I have to walk down 40 something flight of stairs to get to the ground. It could be a big ask for someone like myself who is not physically fit, but I guess for some elderly residents, it would even be worse. So high-rise building is always good, but then 40 story, I don't know. It is sort of a bit too high in my own view. Especially in Burwood at the moment, the fire station only has two fire engines. I don't know if they're capable of addressing any fire issues if there's anything arises in a building in that sort of dimension. On the other hand, I fully appreciate the fact that we like to get involved, the council would like to get involved, and we'd like our residents to get involved. But if we don't support this motion tonight, and Kimberly has explained it quite clearly that we could lose future involvement in this development, and hence,
I might just get to wrap up, Councillor.
I would supportive of this.
Okay, thanks. Councillor Del Duca, you wish to speak for or against?
I'll speak for the motion. I raised a few points there. I think that it's important that the community has an opportunity to have a say. And I personally would have preferred this to stay open for longer and for more people to be given an opportunity to speak. I think the higher concentration of returns, especially at a time when we were in the middle of a global health pandemic, does suggest that there is significant interest in the community in this. And whilst it is in a local area in the Burwood town centre, it clearly is a large development that affects a lot of people. So I thought that was an important thing to note. However, a couple of things just on that I would like to point out. For one, am not interested in seeing a lot of overdevelopment in Burwood. And I say overdevelopment clearly because, I mean, development is important and is good, and I'm not going to sit here and suggest that all development shouldn't happen. And I think there are a lot of merits to this proposal. One thing we have as a council work to do was to try to keep developments inside the town centre and leave things like the Vision Centre in Enfield separate, which is why we voted against that one when that came up, because whilst we are a local community, we are also a hub in the region. So there does need to be that balance. But I think, and to the point that's been made here with the applicant saying they will proceed regardless of what we do, Councillor Deputy Mayor Manor and Councillor Chan have said, I think it's much better for us to be in the tent, as part of the process and being able to consult and advocate on behalf of the community as opposed to being cut out of it. So whilst my preference would definitely have been for this to be deferred for more democratic opportunities for residents to have their voices heard, I think it's important that we stay involved. So I will vote in favour for that reason.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Del Duca. Any other speakers? Okay, look, just quickly, I'm going to be speaking in support of the recommendation, and I'm going to make a number of notes as to and a number of reasons why I'm supporting the application. One, like Councillor Del Duca and the other councillors have said, I think it's important that we keep in control of the process or have involvement in the process. My other reasons for supporting the application is because I think this proposal will actually be a better outcome than the proposal on the existing zone. Yes, we will have two of the four towers taller than what you would get under the existing zones, but they will actually provide larger setbacks. We're also talking about a site that's 15,000 square metres, so it's the largest site in Burwood's history, I believe. It's a billion-dollar project. It's a shopping centre, so it's not just a residential tower. It's a shopping centre, hotel, retail precinct, commercial office space precinct, and residential. One of the things I was most impressed with was back in 2016 when the architect, Michael Harrison from Architectus, who I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, has won an award for One Bligh Street in the city, which is the best, voted the best commercial building in town, just across the road from the Renzo Piano design buildings. One of the things that I was really impressed with was the shopping centre was actually designed before the residential towers. There is a process, I guess, of wanting to have more consultation and involvement. This matter has been going on since 2016. It was actually reported back in 2016 and a number of times on the front page of the Inner West Courier, as well as being provided. All our consultation that we've done during the COVID period and pre the COVID period were all direct letters. So we sent out 1,100 direct letters as well as advertising it on our social media. That's actually a wider consultation process than that would have existed with a normal proposal. Could we have done more? Possibly, but where do you draw the line with consultation? Does that then mean the next application you have, you then have to notify the whole 15,000? That's why it's actually addressed in listed on our websites, in our local papers, as well as our publications. Just quickly on the issue of would this might set a precedent for other applications, I don't believe it will. We had an applicant that tried to propose a similar height on 5,000 square metres of land opposite Westfields in Victoria Street, which the council successfully refused, simply because the argument of the developer, who was just trying to get more residential units on the actual application, had no ongoing economic benefit. So the council didn't believe in the project. We refused that. They then appealed it to the Joint Regional Planning Panel or to the department, and they upheld council's view in that. This application that we have before us, as I mentioned, has been going on since 2016, will involve greater setbacks onto Railway Parade to allow another bus interchange there. It will involve the widening of Clarendon Lane there, so to actually turn that into a proper access point. It will have public walkways which will connect in through Wynne Avenue and then connect through to Hornsey Lane, which is under what the council's current vision is to create that walkway from Condor Street all the way through the plaza and then eventually to crack that through onto Burwood Road to create more public squares, walkways, which could be filled with public art and so forth. The taller towers will be taller, but I have spoken on the record in the past that I believe certain large sites such as either this or possibly a future council car park, maybe in Elizabeth Street, should warrant taller, skinnier towers than the type of towers we're getting in the town centre. I don't think the developments we're getting in the town centre that are being approved by the Joint Regional Planning Panel under the current planning LEP are great credit to design. That's my view. Unfortunately, the way the planning system has become, it's become a tick-a-box system. And that's not allowing good design. Our current policies allow for larger sites over 5,000 square metres that can show an ongoing economic benefit to actually put forward a planning proposal. And our current policies also allow, and there's been precedence on this, breaches in our current height controls if it can show that you're going to get better design outcomes. So I feel that that's consistent with this. This application has been going on, I guess, for 5 years. The other thing that I think it's important to note with this is it's a shopping centre. So we're not just getting a residential tower. I hope and believe from what's been presented by the architect, Mr. Harrison, when they came up with the initial designs, that this will be a landmark tower. It'll be tall and skinny, but it'll be landmark. It will be a better outcome for the people behind. While they can't envisage that a tower that tall is going to be a better outcome, it actually is, because you're not going to have, under the current planning floor space and height limits that's currently in our LEP, you're just going to get buildings that are going to mirror the ones behind them, which will actually be directly blocking any solar access or any views that they may have. These towers were designed to allow better access through that, to allow continuation of the actual separation between buildings behind that. So on that basis, I think it's important to note. The other thing it's important to note is, while there's been some mention that we're only getting a 2,000 square metre park, we weren't getting any park at all. The reason council put forward this area, which is currently the council car park in front of the library, that's council land. That's actually zoned for, I think, a 10 or a 14 storey development. It could mean that a future councillor in the future could sell that off and you'd get another tower on that corner. What we actually came up with when we sat down with our staff is we thought, well, we don't want the whole of Railway Parade to be filled up with these towers. So what could we do with that space in front of the library? And what we came up with was, and I put forward an idea, is why don't we turn that into a public park? At the same time, we don't want to lose the actual car park on there. So we propose to transfer the floor space from this car park to allow the developer or the applicant to take that and use that on their site, which has meant they've gotten it, their towers have become taller, because you remember we're taking a tower off the corner of Railway Parade and Condor Street and putting it on top of the applicant's, or Holdmark or Billwood Place, I should say, putting it on top of their development, has meant that we now have that park space and 180 car spots underneath the application. I'm not going to go into the rest of the public benefits that have been listed. I think the biggest benefit today, other than the monetary stuff, which we'll talk to about in the VPA, which is the next item, I think, especially in this environment, this is going to create 5,000 jobs. 1,700 of those admittedly are during the construction phase, but we're going to have 3,300 jobs when the shopping centre opens. And, you know, as a father of four young kids I was born in Croydon, I was born in the Melvin Hill estate. My kids were born in Croydon. My wife was born in Croydon. We're Croydonites, even though we live in Billwood now. One of the things I look forward to, my daughter just started university this year. What a year to start. I mean, with the whole COVID now, it's all been online. But in saying that, I want the opportunity for my kids or my future grandkids, hopefully, God willing, to have the opportunity to work locally if they can. You know, while they're at university, most of the kids look for retail jobs. I don't want them to have to travel to Broadway or travel to Roseland Shopping Centre or to Ryde or Chatswood to actually work in retail. I want to be able to provide those retail jobs in our local area. And that finally, just one of the things I really want to finish up on, it's been our policy since 2000, and I've been public about this, is to concentrate our development in the town centre. One of the reasons we've been able to protect areas like our Melvin Hill estate and Enfield in the majority, other than the Flower Power site, which this council fought very hard against, and Croydon Park and Burwood Heights and most of Burwood and Croydon, is because we've been showing the department that we're actually providing our housing growth in the town centre. And if I look around some of the other councils in neighbouring councils, some of the suburbs have been destroyed because they've had an approach of having 4 and 5 and 6 storey type developments in their residential areas. And some of their suburbs and streets have been destroyed. I mean, you only need to drive through Homebush now to see what was a beautiful suburb previously, which had beautiful Federation homes, now filtered with 5 and 6 storey residential towers. So I'm of the view that we should have that type of development concentrated in our town centres, and I haven't changed that view. And I hope that the issues that have been raised by residents in the submissions, and I thank those residents that have been involved, and especially those for speaking that came on and spoke tonight and made the effort and time. I hope some of those issues that all those issues that they have been raised, especially with regards to greener buildings, will be taken up in the form of the DA stage. So I think that's really important. Councillor Manner, did you wish to have a write a reply?
No, thank you very much for your information that you provided us, Mr. Mayor. It pretty much tells the story. Thanks again.
So we're going to have the vote now. So I'll ask you all to please to raise your hand because we need to record the voting decision as it is a planning matter. So all those in favour? So it's the mover, Councillor Manner, Councillor Chan, Councillor Crichton, Councillor Del Duca and myself. So that was unanimous. Okay. Thank you, councillors. The next item, and thank you to all those residents that spoke. Now, I know on the next item, we also have a speaker. I think it's Judy. Are you still there, Judy? I think, Judy, you wanted to speak on the voluntary planning agreement as well. Is that correct, Judy? Are you still there? Judy Beryl? Yes. Hi, Judy.
Can you hear me?
Yep. So we're on the next item, item 31/20, which is the draft voluntary planning agreement. Can I ask that you, you've also registered to speak on that item. Is that correct?
I did, but I don't think there's much point now.
Okay. You don't wish to speak any further?
Bit of a done deal. No.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there, yeah, the applicants, did you want to address, because you had registered, sorry, here as well. I almost missed that, to speak on the VPA. Mr. Furlong?
Recommendation. No, we don't wish to speak, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Can I just hand over, before I get into questions, how about I hand over to Kimberly and she can give us a bit of a rundown on the VPA and how the negotiations have happened and how it's been separate from the actual planning process and how during the fortnightly meetings, I believe that you've been having, we've actually had an independent probity auditor. Is that correct, Kimberly? Attend all those meetings. Did you wish to give an update?
Certainly, Mr. Mayor, thank you for that. Yes, and you are correct. We have been in negotiations with the proponent for over a year now. We established a Burwood Place delivery working group specifically to address issues that were coming out of the planning proposal, the DCP, and the voluntary planning agreement. And we did procure an independent probity advisor, and that probity advisor has been in attendance at every single one of the meetings that we have held, which have had agendas and minutes done for each one of those. So in summary, the VPA provides approximately $80 million worth of monetary and public benefits. $30 million of that is in monetary contributions to be delivered in installments per the schedule that's in the VPA, with the first installment after the DA is approved at that time, and then based upon different construction phases that are completed, then additional installments would be due to council at that time. The VPA, as it currently stands, consists of an urban park, which you've already discussed several times tonight, car spaces to replace those that are there at the moment, a library extension, and a commercial office space and associated car spaces in the development itself. Those benefits together come to about $50 million, $51 million in value. That's obviously not going to be cash given to council, but it would be works in kind provided to that value at the time of construction. I will note that those works in kind are the first things that are being committed to in the voluntary planning agreement and are due within 18 months to 3 years of the granting of the development application for the project.
So what parts are they that you're saying that need to be delivered? Is that the car park and the...
All of the public benefits.
Okay.
Have a time frame of being delivered up front.
Okay. Now, councillors would also note that we've got just an amendment to the VPA recommendation. So there was a slight amendment there. And the reason for that is we've got here in the section, just for those in the public that are listening, that pretty much states there's 800 square metres of library, but now libraries have become community hubs, which could mean other uses so that are attached to the library. So it could mean some form of more study rooms. It could mean more forms of community uses like playing arenas or areas, squash courts, indoor basketball. It could mean more reading areas. So we just don't want to be tied down with, so it would still be the same amount of square meters, which I believe is 800 square meters. Is that correct, Kimberly?
That is the current proposal, yes.
Yeah, but we're changing, and Tomaso is going to give me, we're just changing slight wording to read that council authorises the general manager to consider amendments to the public benefits excluding the urban park in the draft VPA to ensure that the public benefits delivered are appropriate to the current and future needs of Burwood as a strategic centre in accordance with council's local strategic planning statement. Sorry, that was part two. Part one was that council endorsed the draft VPA. Part three, that council authorised the general manager to make amendments to the draft VPA resulting for recommendation two above and any minor amendments to the draft VPA prior to execution. So I think that's the change there. The rest is the same. Just quickly before we go on, Kimberly, I just wanted to ask, how has the VPA process, because there's been some comment that, council fulfills that it's been obliged. So when you assess the application planning proposal, which was recommended, how did the VPA, how can the community have assurance that the VPA being such a large, it's probably the largest in the history, in Burwood's history, in regards to a contribution or a community benefit, how did we ensure that that didn't play a part in the planning outcome? Was it how separate was that kept, and what actions were taken to ensure that we protected the integrity of the planning assessment as opposed to the VPA assessment?
Right, through you, Mr. Mayor. The planning, a voluntary planning agreement is what its first word is. It's voluntary and it is offered by the proponent under legislation of the Environmental Planning and Assessment Act and the regulations that go with that. So it is purely a legislative opportunity for a proponent and a council to work together to provide the community in which the impacts of the development are going to occur the opportunity for greater benefits to offset those impacts.
And just on that, how did we keep this separate from the planning assessment side, which is the item we just voted on?
Well, the planning proposal to date has been through a state level review, which through the Department of Planning. The Department of Planning is not involved in the development of the VPA.
Okay.
So at this point, there's been no...
So the Department of Planning were pretty much assessing the planning proposal, which then sent it back to council. So just to, I guess, give some residents an idea of how the process has worked. So the plan needs to be ticked off by New South Wales Department of Planning. They then send it back to council and say to council, you can now make the plan, or if you don't, we will make it. We'll put someone else in charge to make the plan, which is what we just did.
In this case, the department gave us the ability to do the community consultation.
Okay.
But it must now go back to them for plan making.
Okay.
They are not interested in the VPA. The VPA does not go back to the department. Okay. It's completely independent.
So how do we, one, so this has been an independent process as well. So when you've actually met to talk about the VPA and community benefits, have discussions been spoken? Like, was the planning being discussed at the same time, or was it focused just on your community benefit?
No, they were all discussed at the same time. Okay. Because there is a nexus between the outcomes, the impacts from the development and the outcomes.
Okay. Did the VPA and the community benefit, I guess, was that influencing the planning decisions we were sort of taking or looking at or our assessment?
I would say indirectly, yes, because of the actual logistical physical presence of the development next to the urban park that's going to be coming out of the public benefits. So there had to be some correlation between the two in the discussions.
Okay. And so you mentioned that there had been an independent probity officer.
Advisor,
and,
yes.
And what was their role in those meetings with staff, and who was meeting from staff? So it would have been yourself and our planning staff, or?
So the Burwood Place Delivery Working Group has a terms of reference, and within that terms of reference, there are six members. There's three representatives from council and three representatives from the proponent.
Okay.
The independent, those from council include myself as deputy general manager and the group managers for both assets and infrastructure and strategic planning. Okay. And then the proponent has three members. The probity advisor is not a member. The probity advisor advises us and is questioned at the beginning and at the end of each of the meetings if they have any issues or concerns, and has the ability to assess whether or not the there has been probity applied through the discussions.
And have we ever have any issues of probity?
No,
that the probity officer never, okay,
not today.
Is there anything else you wanted to add before I ask councillors questions with regards to the community benefit outcome?
I would just say that this process that we followed over the last year, I think, is fairly unique, and that the ability to have a form of governance over the development of this VPA with the high profile that it has, the large amount of monetary value that it has been a substantial process that the public should feel very confident about.
Okay, great. And can I just make the point also that we had received some written submissions that were late and had been received over the last week.
Correct.
That we had tabled with the councillors prior to this evening's meeting. So I think they were given ample time to look at those submissions. Do I have any questions from councillors? Okay. There being no questions, do I have a mover?
I'll move.
So it's been moved by Councillor Manor, seconded by Councillor Chan. Did you wish to speak?
Yes, only to say that I congratulate the staff and the applicant for maintaining an ongoing dialogue throughout this process so that the best outcome is achieved for our existing and our future residents. More work will be done, and we and our community will have another chance at reviewing and understanding the project at the time of the DA lodgement. So I support this recommendation.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Councillor Chan, did you wish to speak? Did you wish to add anything, Councillor Chan?
No. The Deputy Mayor took the words off my mouth. And I would like just to thank everybody and all the parties involved.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Chan. Any other speakers? Just quickly, I can't envisage that we wouldn't be supporting the voluntary planning agreement, considering that the planning proposal item previously had been, going back to the department for the making of the plan. But in saying that, I think it's really important to note that there are major community benefits. And this one is that what's currently a car park is now got the opportunity to become a park. Is it enough? I don't think public space or open space is ever enough. And I think we just got to keep working on strategies to try to increase those spaces. I believe the extension of 800 square metres for the current library or for community use, I think, and that's net square metres. So I believe it's 1,000 square metres gross, which could mean, you know, if it's parts of it are eaten up by stairwells or whatever else, it has to be 800 square metres of usable space. Am I correct in saying that, Kimberly? Okay, so I think that's going to be a great benefit too. Council's also got a policy or a strategy in place where we wanted to have a target of achieving within 10 years 10,000 square metres of commercial space. Some people ask, well, why would you want so much commercial space? Because Council has a financial strategic plan in place where we want to ensure that over time we become less reliant on rates and become more reliant on investment income. And by allowing us to actually take up more commercial space in development, which is like what's happened now in Burwood Grand, where you could see that bridge across Hornsey Lane, which I might foreshadow is going to have a new naming competition coming up soon to rename that square, is because we, for example, where we currently are in Elsie Street, we have 2,000 square metres here where Service New South Wales is. We own a number of those retail opportunities under there. We own a number of cafes. By allowing us to increase the number of commercial space we have, we can then generate a rental income or an investment income, which can then feed into our capital works program. And then in the future, we don't have to rely on, or future councils when then we'll not have to rely on future earning from rates as much as they are reliant on at the moment. The other thing is with the 5,300 square metres that we would achieve as new space in this building. That's more than 2.5 times what we currently have here in Elsie Street. And that also protects the council in the future because we're creating this community hub around the library. We're hoping within the month or in about a month's time, we will be able to open our new library and community hub to the public, and council will be relocating to that area. And that new community hub will have spaces like digital recording rooms, acoustically treated music training rooms for kids, more study space, wet areas for our toddlers to actually be able to come in and paint and make a mess, new reading areas, indoor-outdoor gardens, so we can actually have book readings and so forth on. So what that means is as our populations increase in the future in 10 or 20 years' time, if we then need to jump onto more community space that we may need, or we might be able to have the current office space that council has in that Burwood Grand building converted to more community space, for example, that whole level, it may mean that we then jump into this building. So we're creating more space to provide more flexibility for council in the future to actually provide more community space as well as more office space if we need that. One of the things out of the whole COVID pandemic has actually taught us that we can actually also rely less on office space for ourselves because we can now have a percentage of our workforce working from home. And we've actually found that some departments, in discussing that with the general manager prior to today's meeting, when we were talking about the whole coming back into the routine of council, one of the things we actually spoke about is that there's been some efficiency gains in some of the departments because of people working from home. And that then means, and I think that's going to be something that the future of not just New South Wales, but Australian industry is going to look at, because it will then mean that we will be able to have less reliance on public transport, for example. People have less travelling times, which then means they can actually provide more input and more concentration into their work when they're actually at their desks at home. So one of the things we will be foreshadowing as a council in the future, and I'll be raising with the general manager and the council as a mayoral minute, is to look at how do we have a target for the next 5 years to have a percentage, whether it's 10 or 20% of our workforce working from home. Now, when I say working from home, that doesn't mean that we necessarily have someone working from home for the whole week. It might mean that we actually break up our work schedules, whereas, you know, Councillor Crichton and Councillor Chan might work from Monday to Thursday, and they have the Friday off. Councillor Manor and Councillor Del Duca might do the Wednesday to Friday and they have the Monday, Tuesday off. Or not have off, but work from home on those days. So we're going to look at providing that real flexible workforce to ensure that we have less reliant on office space, as well as looking at ways to increase productivity, which hence means if we rely less on our space as a council, we can then have free up more space for either leasing out to have a further, investment income, or have more community space. And that might mean more community meeting rooms. We forever having community groups coming to us wanting to have more space and more community rooms. Just quickly and finally, also on the $30 million in monetary contributions, which will feed into our LSPS and to our which is in line, sorry, with our LSPS, will also allow us, and we've currently got a VPA policy in place, which council has had in place, I believe now for the last 6 or 7 years, a number of the funds that we've received from those program from those projects that have happened in the town centre have had increases in the current allowable height, and it has meant a VPA monetary contribution. What that has meant also is that we've been able to embark on nearly, I think it's a $30 million capital works program over the last couple of years into our major parks. Like, for example, if you look at Henley Park alone, I believe our current spend is about $7.5 million, and we're foreshadowing to spend another $7.5 million this year. So it's nearly $15 million just on that park alone, which will include a new indoor pool, an additional indoor pool, a new amenities block. We've got some netball/basketball courts that will be going in there. So there's future works. There's a lot of exercise equipment that's going into all our parks. A lot of that VPA money was also used in developing the 5-hectare park at Wongle Park in Croydon. Which has allowed, you know, a great green space there with wetlands. And there was an issue that was raised during Councillor Crichton's notice of motion with regards to a signage at Wongle Park. We're actually in the process where we're currently finalising some signage with a consultant to actually put up new signage, not just around our parks, such as Wongle Park, but also around our LGA. That with Wongle Park, there has been also a brief previously, so we're quite aware of that, of reflecting our Indigenous community and our history here. And one of the things also with the VPA is we're creating these squares and public spaces and the separation is to allow more walkable spaces, more shared zones, so people are less reliant on cars. Wynne Avenue will become a shared zone between pedestrians/cars that are entering into the shopping centre. And that will provide more opportunity for public art and public art spaces. So on that basis, I think it's really important that, and I think it's really good news that it's the largest VPA attached to a planning proposal that I'm aware of outside of the city. And I definitely believe it's the largest in Bill's community. So well done to all the staff that have been through a very vigorous process. I know this process alone has taken 4 years. I know the developer's been dragged tooth and nail to accept some of the terms that we've put in here, but it was a non-negotiable stance because we wanted to make sure that we were getting the best outcome for our community out of any proposal on the Burwood Place site. There being no further speakers, you're right to reply, Councillor Manor, and it's as per the amended recommendation that was put forward to the councillors. Any right to reply, Councillor Manor?
No, Mr. Mayor. As you've spoken, I support everything that you've said. Thank you.
Okay. So I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Those against? Is there any against? I can't see you, Councillor Del Duca, so I assume that you're in favour. So it's Councillor Manor, Councillor Chan, Councillor Crichton, Councillor Del Duca and myself. So that was supported unanimously. Okay, thank you, councillors, for your support. The next item, councillors, is... Yes, and Councillor Ferno-Cook is back in. Welcome back, councillor. So we're now on to item 32/20. Which is the operational plan and budget. Do I have any speakers for the operational plan and budget? While we're doing that, I might actually hand over to the deputy mayor because I must excuse myself. I've got to go to a condolence. So my uncle passed away on the weekend, and it's probably best. I think the matters going forward is the draft delivery program and budget, as well as the other items. So I might ask Councillor Manor, who's here, if he wants, he can actually come and sit up here.
Condolences, John.
Oh, thank you. So I'll just give us a minute, just hold on there for a minute, and I'll just have a quick chat to see where Councillor Manor is going to take over from.
Councillors, well, can you hear me? whilst George settles in, I just wanted to clarify in relation to the operational plan. In relation to the report for the operational plan and budget, I just wanted to note that we had a couple of typos on the dates within the report, which we're going to correct. Some, instead of saying 2018 to 2020, said 2020-24, so we're going to rectify that. But I just wanted to point your attention to the recommendations which we are going to amend. For recommendation number one, it will read as that council endorsed the draft delivery program for 2018-21, and the rest will continue. And on resolution number four, you'll say the following public exhibition, a report including a submission received, be prepared for council's consideration and adoption of the draft delivery program 2018-21 and operational plan 2020-21. The rest reads the same. So apologies, we picked that up today, so we will make the amendments, but nothing else changes within the report.
There you go. Okay, thank you very much, Tomaso. All right, now we go back to the item 32/20. Okay, 32/20, draft delivery program 2018 to 2021, operational plan and budget for 2020 to 2021, the draft 2020 to 2021 statement of revenue policy, the draft fees and charges for 2020 and 2021, endorsement for public exhibition. Any speakers?
I'll move it.
I moved by Councillor Ferno Cook, seconded by Councillor Ernest Chan. Any speakers? Okay, I move that the item 3220 is moved. All for it? Okay, show of hands. Okay, everyone unanimously showed hands up as an endorsement. Okay, it's moved unanimously. Thank you. Item 3320, exhibition of the generic plan of management.
I'll move with a question, Mr. Deputy Mayor.
Sure.
I'm happy to move it. I just have a question with the...
We've lost you. We've lost Councillor Ferno Cook. Sorry. We lost you, Councillor.
Yeah, you got me now?
Yeah, can you start again, please?
Yeah. Just in regards to this Sanders Reserve proposal, which I fully endorse, my concern is about the size of the proposed off-leash area, because it's got some large trees and so the usable area is quite limited. Now, if we put in the, we dig the holes and put in the fences, what's the cost of, you know, changing it? Because I know when we did at Blair, it was highly unsuitable, and in the end we had to expand the area anyway. So my concern is about the usability and us spending money on something and then finding it's not fit for purpose, as they say about amalgamations.
Thank you, Councillor. I'll hand over to Kimberly Everett to reply back to your question.
Who are you, Deputy Mayor? Councillor Ferno Cook, the size of the dog off-leash area has been somewhat dictated by the location of an electrical easement through the park. So we had to go on the far side of that easement versus the closer side to give the dog park area enough space for the dogs to be off the leash. So unfortunately, we've had to encroach that a little bit more just to get over that hump, if you will.
But through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, just in regards, is there, to my second question, is what's going to be the cost if we need to move it, you know, more forward? Because it's not used that much as the playground is used very well, but there's not really much use for the middle area. So, you know, we're kind of squished into a very small space, and there are quite a lot of dog walkers there who use that area. So what's the cost of moving it? Should we do a marker and trial it first to see if it's usable?
Thank you, Councillor. Can you put your mic on mute while I hand over to Kimberly to answer? Thank you.
Sorry about that, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Councillor, I think you have a good idea about trialling the space. I do not have a cost available for you at the moment. However, I will reference back to the item tonight. It's just about putting the use for a dog off leash area into the plan of management. Council's more than happy to come back to you with further details of the plan and any cost implications for the actual dog off leash area itself.
Thank you, Kimberly. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm happy to move it as is, and perhaps I'll do a site inspection with that council staff about the usability before we start spending money.
Thank you, Councillor Furneaux-Cook. Do I have a seconder? Thank you, Councillor Del Duca, as a seconder. Okay, all those for it? Yep. All in favour? Okay, those against? Okay, carried unanimously. Thank you. Okay, so item 34/20, investment report as at 31st of May 2020. Any questions, councillors? Okay, so I have a mover, Councillor Crichton, and seconded by Ernest, Councillor Chan. Okay, all in favour for the recommendation? Okay, thank you. Carried unanimously. Thank you. Item 35/20, interim budget and fees and charges during July 2020. Any speakers, councillors? Okay, I have a mover. So, Councillor Del Duca. Okay, seconded Councillor Crichton. All in favour? Okay, all in favour. Thank you, carried unanimously. Okay, so we have the Community Recycling Centre. Thank you, Councillor. Item 36/20, Community Recycling Centre, resource sharing arrangements with Canada Bay Council. Moved, Councillor Furneaux-Cook. Seconded, Councillor Crichton. All in favour? Thank you. Carried unanimously. Thank you. So we have three information items. I'll just read those items and then we can vote on them in a block if that's okay. Items N20/20, answers to questions without notice. Council meeting of the 28th of April 2020. Item INT21/20, answers to questions without notice. Council meeting of the 19th of May 2020. Item IN 22/20 and petitions, and item IN 23/20. These are information items, so we don't need to vote on those, do we? Okay, thank you. Okay, now I just want to move into confidential items, councillors. So can we have the gallery and hopefully.
I'll move to go into a confidential session to the exclusion of the public gallery.
Thank you very much, Councillor Furneaux-Cook, and seconded by Councillor Del Duca. Thank you. So we moved into confidential items. Okay, can we stop recording at this stage or not? I need a mover and a seconder. Move, Councillor Del Duca, seconded Councillor Chan, to move into open session. Thank you.
I'm going to
Do you want me to read out the recommendations?
Yep. So I'll hand over to the General Manager to read the recommendations and the outcomes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. So in relation to item 37/20, the tender for the Henley Park Amenities Building Upgrade and Extension, Council resolved to approve the additional amount of $460,000 from Section 712 funds for the upgrade and extension of the existing amenities building. That in relation to the tender T00519 for Henley Park Amenities Building Upgrade and Extension, the tender submission for Grindley Interiors for the total cost of $2,009,720 excluding GST be accepted. The following acceptable results for the independent financial health check and the pre-contract interview. The authority be granted to the general manager to confirm tender requirements and contract conditions and sign the tender contract and any other related documentation. And finally, if required, subject to the outcome of item three above, should it be necessary to negotiate with an alternative tenderer, that the general manager be authorised to negotiate up to a maximum variation of 5% in cost of the recommended contract price of $2,009,720, excluding GST. In relation to item 38, /20, SS Rock Regional Household Cleanup Material Disposal Tender Evaluation. Council approved that Council receives the tender recommendation report from SS Rock for the supply of services to receive and process municipal household cleanup material. The Council accept the recommendation of the preferred supplier being Bingo Industries at the cost nominated in the SS Rock cleanup tender recommendation, and finally that the general manager be authorised to sign the preferred supplier commissioning agreement on behalf of council.
Thank you very much, Tommaso. So we questions without notice. So in writing, does anyone have any questions without notice to send through? Okay, no questions without notice. Okay, thank you.
Sorry, I do. I have two questions. The first being to improve communication and transparency for our residents, and in light of the recent closure of the Inner West Courier, can the General Manager publish as a monthly information item with the council meeting papers a table showing development applications that have been determined by staff under delegation, showing the DA number, the DA lodgement date, the property address, the description of the property, the date determined, and the decision. But I'll email that through. And then I just have a second question too. And that is, does Enfield Aquatic Centre give consideration to residents who may work during the day when they plan the timetable for aqua aerobics classes? If not, how can we make available a weekly after-hours class time slot for our residents post-COVID?
Thank you very much, Councillor. Thank you, Councillors. And have a good evening. I declare the meeting closed at 8:14 p.m.